Hello, everybody. This is David Two, Like Tuesday. Welcome to my podcast. Today, the topic is going to come from Genesis chapter 3. We all know the story of Eve and the serpent in the Garden of Eden. Eve is somewhat newly created, and there she is walking in the garden, and she's been told not to go and eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And for some reason, she happens to be hanging out around that tree. Well, lo and behold, who's there but the serpent? And the serpent, his goal is to get Eve to fall from God's grace so that we would be where we are today, living in a world filled with sin. So he tempts her, and he says certain things to her along the lines of, certainly, God did not say. She falls for it and eats from the fruit, shares it with Adam, and here we are today. That's the basic story. But as I was reading that story and doing a little research on it, I came across something interesting, and it made me remember some of the questions I've had, and I'm sure you've had, about that story. Let's face it, that story is absolutely one of the stories like Jonah and the whale or Noah and the ark. We know they're true, but they really make us have to push through reality or what we believe is reality. And so this story is very similar to that because we have this story of a talking serpent who then tempts Eve. So I picked up my book from G. Campbell Morgan. It's a book called This Was His Faith, and if you've never read it or you don't have it, I highly recommend it. Go out and get it. It's a great book. It has some wonderful tidbits about the Bible. G. Campbell Morgan was a great man, a great scholar, and it'd be very much worth your time to read that book if you read nothing else from him. But he has a point about this particular area in Genesis chapter 3, verse 1. And in his book, he makes a couple of interesting points. He says, any beast of the field, that section in the scripture, any beast of the field is misleading. He points out that the Hebrew word, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this right, che, means simply living things and not necessarily beasts. He points those things out, but then he comes to this point and he says that the Hebrew word that's translated serpent is noshaw and or noshash. He says that that really means shining one. And so he makes the point that Satan, shining one, appeared to the woman as a shining one. And I thought that was really interesting because I was thinking about it. I was like, so what are you saying? Are you saying that there wasn't a serpent in the garden? And instead, it was actually Satan in the garden, showing up as a shining one, showing up as himself in some respects. So I thought that was really interesting, and because I respect G. Campbell Morgan so much, I decided to do some additional research to see what else is out there that speaks about this particular topic. And I was searching through the internet and searching through my book, I came across the Companion Bible. It's a Bible that's edited by E.W. Bullinger. And what's so interesting about it are his notes. It's basically the King James Version, but on the side it has all his notes. At the end it has all these appendices. And one of these appendices is Appendix 19. In Appendix 19, he actually deals with this particular subject. It's a great, great read. I would heavily recommend that you read it. In fact, that's the basis for my blog today and for this audio cast today is simply read Appendix 19 of Bullinger's Companion Bible. I could end here, but I figure many people might not read it. So I'm going to just summarize what he has to say there because I think it's really important stuff. Let me start off with the beginning of that appendix. And he says in that appendix, In Genesis 3, we have neither allegory, myth, legend, nor fable, but literal historical facts set forth and emphasized by the use of certain figures of speech. So, in essence, what he's saying there is he's not saying that Genesis 3 is an allegory, a myth, a legend, a fable. He's saying it's literal historical fact. He's not saying that what we read there isn't exactly what happened. But what he is saying is that it's emphasized by figures of speech. And what does he mean by that? He actually goes on, I'm not going to go too deep into it, but he goes on to say that in his opinion and his belief, figures of speech in the Bible actually highlight something and make it more understandable, more recognizable to us. So in essence, by using a figure of speech, you make it more real. So that's his basic concept. So his thinking is that God has given us Genesis chapter 3 and has used this figure of speech, specifically Satan as the serpent, to make this more true, more real, more understandable for us. And he makes the point that unfortunately what we have done is that we have confused this figure, which is the serpent, for the literal object, which is Satan. We've confused them. We understand that that's Satan, but we've made the serpent the actual object. And we've forgotten that it's really Satan. And his point is that we wouldn't have done that if it wasn't for Genesis 3:14. Because in Genesis 3:14, we read this. On your belly you will go, and dust you will eat all the days of your life. Now, when we read that, and we recognize that we've seen this serpent earlier on, we kind of put two and two together, and we say, therefore, it must be a serpent. So we think of Satan as a serpent, and we literally draw paintings of a serpent. We have thoughts of a serpent speaking to Eve. Our mindset has become so much so that we've actually made the serpent an object who's speaking to Eve. However, what's interesting is we don't make that same mistake when we read about the serpent somewhere else. So, for instance, in Revelation 12:9, we read, and the great dragon was thrown down, the serpent of old, who is called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. Now, as we read Revelation 12:9, and we read that, we recognize the great dragon, we recognize the serpent of old, is the devil and Satan. We don't imagine this scene with a dragon falling from heaven or with a serpent falling from heaven. We recognize Satan falling from heaven. And we see the same thing later on in Revelation chapter 20, verse 2. It says, and he laid hold of that dragon, the serpent of old, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years. Now, we don't imagine a serpent or a dragon in handcuffs bound. We just don't do that. We recognize that it is the devil, that it is Satan who is bound. So we don't do this in other places, but we do it in Genesis chapter 3. We think of Satan as the actual serpent, which is why we have such a hard time when people come up to us and they say, well, do you believe that a serpent actually spoke? And we come up with all these things that we say. But we don't do that anywhere else. And here in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 3, Paul actually does something similar. He says that he fears the Corinthians would be deceived by the serpent in the same way that Eve was. And now we start thinking, so does Paul think that Eve was deceived by a serpent, the actual snake serpent? And we find the answer to that very shortly after, because 11 verses later, in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 14, Paul tells us that Satan is an angel of light. And what we recognize is that Paul has put these two things together, the word serpent and the understanding of shining one, and he's put them together, and he's telling us that Satan is an angel of light. Satan is a shining one. Bullinger writes this: "We cannot conceive Eve as holding converse with a snake, but we can understand her being fascinated by one apparently angel of light, in other words, a glorious angel, possessing superior and supernatural knowledge." And he says also, "When Satan is spoken of as a serpent, it no more means a snake than it does when Dan is called a serpent in Genesis 49:17, or an animal when Nero is called a lion in 2 Timothy 4:17, or when Herod is called a fox in Luke 13:32, or when Judah is called a lion's whelp or lion's cub in Genesis 49:9. And he points out all these times where people are named as animals. And he's making the point that we never actually think these people are actual animals. We recognize that it's just a figure of speech. So if we go to Genesis 14 and 15, I'll read that to you. It says this: "The Lord God said to the serpent, 'Because you have done this, cursed are you more than all cattle and more than every beast of the field. On your belly you will go, and dust you will eat all the days of your life. And I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed. He shall bruise you on the head, and you shall bruise him on the heel.'" So let's start first with verse 14. The first thing we see is this "more than every beast of the field" again. We remember that Morgan had originally said, we make a mistake when we think of che meaning beast. It means living things. So here, what we're seeing is, "cursed are you more than all living things," is what's actually going on here. And we recognize Satan is. "On your belly you will go." So Ezekiel 28:17 has an interesting verse. It says, "You corrupted your wisdom by reason of your splendor. I cast you to the ground." That's Ezekiel 28:17. It's a section of scripture where we are reading about Satan. And Ezekiel is telling us that Satan had his wisdom corrupted because of his brightness, because of his splendor. And so, therefore, God cast him to the ground. You see that? We're calling in Genesis chapter 3, God is calling Satan a shining one. And in Ezekiel, we're reading that it is because of his splendor that he has been corrupted. And so, in Genesis chapter 3, we read, "On your belly you will go." And in Ezekiel 28:17, we read, "I cast you to the ground." They're saying the same thing. Ezekiel 28:17 is telling us how God cast Satan down and put him down to the ground. And what he doesn't mean is actually down to earth, although we do read that elsewhere, especially in Revelation chapter 12. But here, what he's saying is, "You thought you were higher than I? I am going to bring you so low that you have no choice but to be submissive, for your submissiveness to be seen by all." And that's what he's saying when he's saying, "cast you to the ground." We see it again in Psalm 44:25, not speaking of Satan specifically, but speaking about this concept of being humiliated to the point of complete submission. It says in Psalm 44:25, "For our soul has sunk down into the dust. Our body cleaves to the earth." It's that same picture of crawling on our belly. That same picture of Satan being put down, crawling in the dust. That same concept. Then we see also in Genesis chapter 3:14 that "dust you shall eat." In Proverbs 20:17 we read, Bread obtained by falsehood is sweet to a man, but afterward his mouth will be filled with gravel. Now, I don't think anybody reading Proverbs 20:17 actually thinks that if somebody steals bread, that they will end up with gravel in their mouth. I don't think that's what it's saying. Galatians 5:15, we read, "But if you bite and devour one another, take care that you are not consumed by one another." Now, we guarantee that Paul does not think we are cannibals, and he is not talking about cannibalism. When he's talking about biting and devouring one another, he's talking about the way we're treating people. When Proverbs speaks about our mouths being filled with gravel, it's talking about the consequences of our wrong behavior. And when we read about dust being eaten by Satan, by the Shining One, it's the same idea. It's this idea that you will reap what you would have sown. Right? So we see that this concept of eating dust and going on the belly are figurative. And we can recognize that truth by going back into verse 15. So in Genesis chapter 3:15, we read, "And I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed. He shall bruise you on the head, and you shall bruise him on the heel." Now, there is no way that we believe that Satan was actually going to hurt the heel of Messiah. That's not what we believe. And nor do we believe that Messiah was going to literally crush the head of a serpent. We don't see Jesus doing that in any of the Gospels. That's not something that Jesus has ever done. That's not what it means. When we read, "He shall bruise you on the head, and you shall bruise him on the heel," what we understand that to mean is that Jesus would be crucified. That's Satan bruising him on the heel. That's Satan's people doing Satan's work to try to destroy Messiah. And we see that's exactly what happens during the crucifixion when mankind, specifically Jewish and Roman leaders, went and tried to destroy Jesus. And that is Satan bruising him on the heel. Now, of course, Satan thought that he had crushed him on the head, but when Jesus rose from the grave and ascended into heaven, it became quite clear that it was nothing more than a small little bite. And instead, by that resurrection, and by that ascension, and by the second coming of Jesus, which will come soon into the future, Satan's head will be crushed. Not that his head will literally be crushed, because Satan is a spirit, but that everything that he stands for, everything that he has tried to do, his plans, everything will be completely destroyed and he will have nothing. That's what's going on there. So what we recognize there in chapter 3, verse 15, is that the bruising of the head and the bruising on the heel are both figurative. They stand for the crucifixion, the resurrection, the ascension, and the second coming of Jesus Christ. They don't stand for actually bruising heads or heels. And in that same place, one sentence earlier, we can say that it makes sense that going on his belly and eating dust is just as figurative. So, with all that put together, what we recognize is that there's really good evidence that when Eve spoke to that serpent of old, it wasn't an actual serpent. It was Satan appearing as a shining one. I'm going to do some more study on this, and I will let you know if it turns out that G. Campbell Morgan and Bullinger's arguments are faulty. I tend to believe that they will not be faulty, and with that, I think I will end up putting a chapter in my book rethinking some popular Christian teachings for this particular subject, because I think that there's so much that can be said here, and I think it's important that people recognize this. When we are able to recognize that Eve spoke to Satan as a shining one, as opposed to an actual physical serpent, how much easier is it for us to speak to non-believers when they question us about these things? How much more confident and realistic will we be able to sound when we tell them what actually happened rather than what we traditionally have believed? So I will do some more research, and if you have any information about this, or if you do your own research and come up upon anything that would be useful, I would love it if you could put them into the comments in this blog post. Just write a comment about it. It would be really super helpful to me, so I would really appreciate it. With that, thank you very much for joining me today. I pray that this has been enlightening and enjoyable. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to my blog. That is what I really need to be able to get some of these things published, especially that book, Rethinking Some Popular Christian Teaching, which has several subjects in it just like this that I have already researched and I feel are definitely right. So I really want to get that published so that many people will hear many things just like we saw today. But I need to get a subscription base on my blog site to do that. So if you haven't already, it would be so great if you could go ahead and subscribe to my blog. And if you've already done that and you think that this is really helpful and useful, I would love it if you could forward this on to your friends and ask them if they would subscribe to the blog as well. I really appreciate your help. I really appreciate all that you've done for me. And more than anything, I appreciate your time, spending that time with me here today. So this is David Tu, and my calling is to share biblical truth with you. Maranatha.